You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is Bach Week, which means we get to commemorate the church musician J.S. Bach with conversations about his work and influence on the church's song over centuries.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can learn more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon. Now, you may notice that we sound a little bit different today. That's because we are recording on location. We're at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are in the library at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis today because we get to do something really special. We love field trips.
We do love field trips.
And Dr. Bruce Durazzi is so gracious and has welcomed us to the library here at Concordia Seminary. He is the Special Collections Library for the Hasse Memorial Library at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Durazzi, thank you so much for welcoming us to the library.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming to visit.
And we're in a very unique space here at the library. This isn't just like a space out open to everyone or to the public. Tell us a little bit about the space where we are.
Okay, well, we're in the reading room right now where people can come to read items from our special collections. And this room is secure compared to the rest of the library. We've got two locking doors and and it adjoins the vault where I work and all that the books are stored. And this part of the library has separate climate controls, so the humidity is lower and the temperature is more stable compared to the rest of the library, that, to keep the books in a condition that will help them to last through several more centuries, we hope.
All right. So we're in a very special room with very special climate control, and you get to handle all of the books, or at least you're in charge of all of the books that we're sitting among. Tell us about your work in the Concordia Seminary Library.
Well, as a librarian for special collections, I help to preserve and to make use of and help our readers make use of the rare books. We have a lot of books. It's I would describe the collection as being kind of narrow, but very deep. So it's Reformation history and Lutheran theology are the main things that we have collected over the years, for the obvious reason that it's a Lutheran seminary. But we have a lot. I mean, there are things that have not been digitized in any German library, but we have a copy of the original printing here, and I can help people get the information they need by pulling the original off the shelf. And we have an ongoing project of collecting, filling in the gaps where we can. So recently, I saw advertised a copy of the first edition of Luther's German interpretation of the Lord's Prayer. And I thought this was historically significant, that it's new theology and he's writing in German, which was, of course, an important contribution to Luther's to write in the vernacular. So I don't actually have a budget, but I have permission to lobby for stuff. So I just took the information about the book to my supervisor and said, this is worth having, or I think this is worth having. Mm-hmm. Can we do it? And we were able to do it. So we just ordered it and it's on its way. So that's an example of something we added. And last year we made a huge purchase of one of the first editions of Luther's German New Testament. So we have a book, a Bible from 15 or the New Testament from 1523 with a whole original cycle of woodcuts illustrating the book of Revelation. So it's a fantastic book to have. And we had, because they're collected, they're not the kind of book that just gets traded down the generation from Lutheran to Lutheran, as most of our things are. they don't come available that often. So it was, we didn't have any early editions of Luther's translations and of the Bible. And we only had Catholic German Bibles from the period. And we thought we really ought to have a Lutheran Bible here. So we made a big splurge last year and got a 1523 New Testament.
Wow. tell us about, now you have the responsibility for a lot of very special pieces in this library. Why is this so interesting to you? Why is this particular opportunity to serve here at the library at Concordia Seminary so interesting to you? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, before studying for a library degree, I studied music and have a PhD in music. And along the way, I learned a lot about European cultural history and learned to read European languages and have always been fascinated by the history of print. And actually, more generally, how new technologies influence culture. So I'm also fascinated by how the advent of recording technology changed the practice of music in the early 20th century, for example. But the way ideas were circulated at the advent of print in the 1400s and into the 1500s was just fascinating to me. And that just happens to be a time when most of the works that were printed were religious works, and turns out to be the period of the Reformation. And when Concordia Seminary was looking for a special collections librarian, they said the person needed to speak German and Latin. And luckily, I could read those languages. And I think not a lot of librarians necessarily have both of those languages. So yeah. It ended up being a really good fit. So I love working with these books and seeing the way the printed page reflects their cultural circumstances and the kind of arguments they make. And sometimes I have a few examples that I could, if we had all day, I could show you some examples where if you just had the text of the book, you would only get part of the story. But when you see the title page and the illustration, you understand that the book is doing a kind of work that's different from what just the text says. So that the importance of the visual culture and the material culture, to understand how the books do what they do, is what fascinates me about the job.
I have a lot of questions, but we're here to talk about the books that we have in front of us.
Yes.
Right now. Tell us what we have in this room that you'll be talking about today.
So, this is what we is commonly known as the Bach Bible. Mm-hmm. This is an edition of the Bible that was edited by Abraham Kalov, published in the 17th century. And this is a copy that belonged to Johann Sebastian Bach. It's in three big volumes because it's heavily annotated. So in addition to Kalov's version of Luther's translation of the text, it includes cross-references within the Bible and references to all of what Kalov thought was the most important interpretive work. So it's got Luther and other theologians between Luther and Kalov that Kalov thought were most important. And they're all embedded between the lines of text. So there's a lot going on in the book itself. And this is the copy that Johann Sebastian Bach owned up until the time of his death.
Okay, so we have roughly less than 20 minutes left, and I now have 1,000 questions.
Of course you do.
Okay, so this is New Testament, is that right?
This is the complete Bible.
The complete
Bible. The three volumes are Old Testament stories and songs, Old Testament prophets, and then the New Testament.
Wow. So three volumes.
And they're big.
They're big. These are not small.
No.
Yes. These are very large volumes, and I think we'll have some images hopefully we can accompany our podcast with in the notes as well.
There'll be a reel on our social media.
And there will be a reel on social media, yes. So you can get a visual as well. These are just large pieces. So tell me about what interaction or what you've had the opportunity to do with these pieces. Have you had an opportunity to look through them much and read? And since you know German and Latin, I assume there's some German, maybe some Latin in these as well.
I think it's entirely in German.
Okay.
But
you haven't read it cover to cover? All of the three volumes?
I have not.
I almost thought you were going to say that you had.
I wouldn't be surprised, but
I have. Well, I'd like to share these with people who are interested in them, but they are so precious. We don't want to handle them too heavily.
Of course.
Yeah.
And we have there's actually a facsimile edition that came out a few years ago that very carefully reproduces all of the details. And it's done on heavy paper with really detailed scans of the individual pages, and even Bach's tiny little handwriting is visible in them. So if you want to get down to the nitty gritty of the text and do real work, we would work with the facsimile primarily, and then get out the original as a treat. Most people who visit the library and are interested in these books really just are more interested in the aura. Mm-hmm. They just want to be in the presence of something that Bach owned, which I completely understand. So most of the time we get them out and I show them the handful of things that I think are most curious about them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I get to do. Luckily, there have been a couple of books about them. So when I need to remember where a specific passage is or something, I can go to the reference book that lists all the box annotations and then go right to the page. So I don't have to thumb through the book looking for the page because we don't like to handle them too much.
Sure.
That would take a while too. There are a lot of pages there. Mm-hmm. How do you know how the piece was added to the library here? How is this here?
That's a good question. And it's, I know roughly.
Okay.
I know some of the story, I should say. We know that this was in Bach's library at the time of his death in 1750 because the theological books that he owned, and he owned about 60 titles, which was a respectable little library, especially for someone who wasn't a preacher by trade.
Yeah.
They were inventoried when they were dividing up his estate. They wanted to make sure they divided things equally, so they brought in an appraiser and made a list. Bach also owned a lot of books about music, which I think just went to his sons who were musical and didn't enter into the valuation of the estate, but the theological books could be sold on. They retained their value pretty well. And so we have a list of all of the books he owned at the end of his life. And of those 60 or so titles, this is the only item that has been identified today.
Wow.
And has been verified as being one of the books on that list. Don't know if maybe he didn't put his name in the others. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But he owned Luther's works in two different editions and several different sermon cycles and other works on Lutheran theology. So between his death and somewhere around the 1833 or so, we don't know what happened to the book. It was presumably sold by the family because they were divvying up the value of the estate shortly after his death. And sometime around in the early 1830s, it was in a used bookstore in Philadelphia.
Oh.
So that's the curious thing. We have no idea how it got, you know, sold on from Leipzig to Philadelphia. And they apparently had no idea of its significance. So it just got sold as an annotated Bible. So
okay.
A recent German immigrant who was a wagon builder named Ludwig Reichle arrived in Philadelphia in the early 1830s and was there for a while and presumably bought the book then at a bookstore in Philadelphia. And then he answered an ad for volunteers to go to a mission town at the frontier, which at the time was Michigan. So they were settling Frankenmuth, Michigan as a mission settlement, and he volunteered to go and be the community's wagon builder. And there it was. He was the wagon builder and had his life in Frankenmuth, Michigan, and started a family there. And they had this amazing item in their house and didn't know. And in the early 1930s, his son, Leonard Reichle, who was by now an old man himself, had his wife's cousin come to visit because he was in the area for a Lutheran. He was a pastor and was in the area for a Lutheran conference of some kind. And during the visit, he said, "Oh yeah, this is our old family Bible." And and he looked at it, and he was a musician, and he recognized the monogram on the title page, and he said, "This might be important." And one of the interesting things about it was that they knew from the inventory of Bach's estate that Bach owned all three volumes. And they had to really press Mr. Reichle to look for the other two volumes. He only had one out. And he said, "No, as far as I remember, we only ever owned the one." And he said, "No, they really should be all three together. Can you check?" So he finally grudgingly went up into the attic and looked through some boxes and found volumes 2 and 3 were just set aside with some other old things in the attic. The Bach Museum in Germany wanted them very much. When the discovery was made public, they wanted them, and I believe they were willing to pay a significant sum to have them. And the man was just so disgusted with Hitler and his government that he said, no, I'm not sending anything to Germany right now. They're, in his own words, they're too godless. Oh. And because it was such an intense and devout Lutheran community, there were a lot of connections to the LCMS through Frankenmuth. And, oh, I'm going to get the, who was it? Was it Fierbringer at the time? Anyway, the then president of the institution had been an elementary school classmate of Leonard Reichel when they were kids. And, you know, they were still in touch. And he said, you know, we could really use a book like that at the seminary. And after a few years of wrangling, he finally said, yeah, okay, I'll just donate it to the seminary. And that's how it came to be here. And, you know, in part because he just was so disgusted with National Socialism that he wouldn't consider sending it to Germany at the time. He decided to donate it here.
Wow. And here we are today looking, like sitting in the same room. This is, wow, this is fascinating. We are talking with Dr. Bruce Durazzi. He's Special Collections Librarian at the Hasse Memorial Library at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And we are in the reading room of the Special Collections and taking a look at the Caliph Commentary, which is also known as the Bach Bible. We'll continue the conversation. We have a ton more questions for Dr. Durazzi, but we're going to pack them all in the next few minutes. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon, whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan. You'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Our guest today is Dr. Bruce Durazzi. He is the Special Collections Librarian at the Hasse Memorial Library at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are in the reading room of the Special Collections because we're taking a look at the Caliph Commentary, also known as the Bach Bible. This is a very large three-volume set that includes Luther's translation of the Bible, right?
Yes.
Luther's German translation with lots of commentary as well from Kalloff. And you said there was another, that there were other commentaries included in this?
Yeah, Kalloff as editor is assembling all of what he considers to be the authoritative commentary. So much of it is Luther's commentary. So if Luther published a book-length commentary on Romans, for example, Kalloff would take the most important comments from Luther's, or what he thought were the most important comments from Luther's book, and insert them next to the lines to which they refer. So it's all, you know, it's all interlinear. And that's what makes it such a big book, because there are a lot of commentaries that are referenced. And also the conventional practice of linking, you know, marking similarities in the New Testament to passages in the Old Testament and vice versa. And
wow. So. As a librarian and musicologist, what do you find most interesting about this piece in Special Collections?
The most interesting thing about it are the places where Bach actually makes marginal notations that reflect his own thoughts. I'll be honest, I had hoped to discover that Bach marked up the text when he set it to music, but he didn't. I think he left, like even the Passions, I think he left the assembly of the text for the purpose of singing to a librettist. So he's not the one who was cutting up the Gospels into singable portions for the text. But he did make notes in places that where he thought there was some significance. And I am reminded that there are some letters that have since been published where he was writing to his higher ups in the Thomaskirche and on the city council, asking for more resources for his music program. And the passages that really interest him are stories where the practice of music is significant in the course of the story. So where there are descriptions of music making. My favorite one is in Second Chronicles when they're describing the dedication of the temple. And they say, they make a, I forget the order of things exactly, but they make a burnt offering and then they say their prayers and then they do a couple of other things. And then there's, then they play music and then God fills up the sanctuary as a cloud. And Bach seems to think that it's not the summation of all of those things, but actually making music that brings Bach's presence or brings God's presence into, brings God's presence into physical manifestation. And he writes, note, you know, where there is devotional music, God is present in his grace. And there are a few places like that where it's his own reflections. And it's specifically about music making in the Old Testament stories. That really reflects something of Bach's character and the way he read the Bible and, you know, maybe the way he was trying to use or was preparing to use the text to make his case for the importance of having those resources in his own liturgical music.
What are some other things we learn about Bach from the commentary, the things that he has written in the Bible?
Well, one thing that's certain is that he took the text very seriously. So there's at the end of the third volume, there are several pages of errata. You know, by the time they had finished compiling the whole thing, they had identified just these typos. And Bach went through, and it does seem to be the same pen and ink in his handwriting, where he went through and he made every change and also added some bits that are corrected some things that weren't even noted in the errata. So Bach seems to have read the whole thing and, or at least read a lot of it closely enough to identify errors when they occur. And he dutifully copied in all of the changes and really wanted to be working with the correct text, from Luther's translation. Other than that, I mean, you know, he obviously valued the Bible text. There's a passage where it's not a Bible text. It's a passage that Kalloff quotes from Luther. And Bach doesn't write a comment, but he just marks it in the margin for emphasis. And it's a place where Luther says something to the effect that one shouldn't be angry on one's own behalf, but anger in defense of one's office is justifiable. And so Bach seems to think that, you know, that, yeah, that's a good point. You know, that if I'm angry because my role as Kapellmeister is threatened, then I'm entitled to be angry about that, but not personal. So that was, I think, a very revealing moment when he marked that part.
Let's talk about art. Art. Is there any art, or is this all text in this three-volume set?
It's all text. There is an engraved portrait of Kalloff. And this, curiously, the original book would have come with an engraved portrait of Kalloff as the frontispiece. This is an engraved portrait of Kalloff, but it's not the one that came with the book when it was printed. So that one got lost and someone replaced it and pasted it down. In fact, later someone pasted the end paper down over it and it had to be steamed off to reveal the portrait underneath. So some of the text is extremely ornate. As you can see, these are, it's in red and the title pages are in red and black with these woodcut details around the title letters. But other than that, and Bach's beautiful signature down at the bottom here.
What would have been the printing technology at that time?
It would have been movable type. So let me...
Oh, wow.
To help, if I can describe this without... It would have been movable type. So every character was a tiny little piece of lead with, you know, one side of it had the letter, the corresponding letter, backwards. So someone had to go through and pull all the letters in the right order and stack them up in a little shelf, and then put them in place and then roll ink on them and press the page down to get the image of the letters. And when I picture what it must have been like to assemble all of those individual tiny little letters and get them all to read correctly backwards, I'm surprised at how few typos there actually are in these old books. They're really pretty accurate about it. I've opened it now to the beginning of the first, beginning of Genesis. And you can see here, it says in large letters, it says in the beginning, I'm translating the German, in the beginning. And then in parentheses, all of these little references to other texts. God, a few more lines of text, created, a few more lines of text.
Definitely a commentary.
Yeah, yeah. Then you turn the page, and there's more commentary yet, and then it says heaven and earth. And then there's another paragraph of commentary. So now we've gone through, what's that, almost a page? Yeah, almost, well, half a page. Anyway, over the page break, and then it says, verse 2, and the earth, commentary, was empty and desolate. So that's how it gets to be a big three volume set.
Wow.
That is impressive. I think I would get lost trying to read that, but it is really cool looking at it. What are some questions that people ask? What are some of the things that people usually want to know or are curious about when they're learning about this Bible from Bach?
I think you've asked most of the most common questions. They ask, so a lot of people are curious about physically keeping it, and they wonder about being able to touch it.
Yeah.
And that they see me touching it without too much concern. And part of the answer to that is that the paper predates the Industrial Revolution. Mm. So it's not wood pulp. It's wood pulp that becomes acidic and breaks down. So this is cloth fiber made the pulp from which this paper was made. So as long as it's in relatively good conditions, if it's not exposed to extreme heat or cold and extremely high or low humidity, it really holds up pretty well. So I'm not terribly worried about actually turning the pages of the book from time to time. What else do people ask? Yeah, I don't know. I think we've covered most of the, how it got here is the big question, which is still, in some respects a mystery. and I know how it ended up here from Philadelphia, how it ended up in America, I have no idea.
Last question, and then we'll let you get back to the vault and the special collections here at Concordia Seminary. If someone is interested in reading or learning more about the Kalev commentary, you mentioned a facsimile earlier. Obviously, not everyone can come in and look at the original here in the library. That would take up all your time. But if someone wanted to learn more about the Kalev commentary known as the Bach Bible, what recommendations would you have for them as to go about learning about that?
There's this book that I use as my reference, actually, by a musicologist, actually, named Robin Lever, who, let me think, I'll get this, J.S. Bach and Scripture, Glosses from the Kalev Commentary, which is by Robin Lever and published by Concordia Publishing House. The copyright date is 1985, but I believe they still have copies. I think they've reprinted it, or you can find it in the library. So this describes in much detail what the book is, what the book itself is about, what Bach's treatment of it shows, and where he made comments of interest. That would probably be the best resource. And I'm drawing a blank on the name of the Dutch publisher who published the facsimile.
I think I came across a link for that. I think that's on the library website. So we'll point them to the library website.
Thank you.
They can find more information there.
There's more information there. And also they published a companion volume with essays and commentary. And that has, everything is in German and English in that volume. So it's, an American audience will find it more friendly.
So you can go to csl.edu and you can click on the library link there, and that'll you'll in the library page you'll find the special collections and rare books, as well with a link to the Bach Bible. This has been so fun. Thank you for letting us take a field trip and come over to the library to see this. This is a magnificent piece. Our guest today, Dr. Bruce Durazzi, he's Special Collections Librarian at the Passy Memorial Library at Concordia Seminary and custodian of the Bach Bible. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you for coming. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour is a production of KFUO. This program and our station are dependent on listeners just like you. To support KFUO Radio, our podcast, and all the other programming, please make your gift or pledge today at kfuo.org/give and help us continue sharing the good news of Christ for you anytime, anywhere. kfuo.org/give.